U.S. and U.K. Strike Yemen in response to attacks in the Red Sea. Yemen pledges to continue its operations in support of Gaza. Reactions pour in following U.S.-led aggression on Yemen, with Iran and the Resistance Front warning of threats to regional and international peace. The Palestinian officials in Gaza say Israel is using genocide and starvation as a policy to force Gazans out of the territory. Hello, everyone. The U.S. and the U.K. have carried out a series of airstrikes on Yemen amid heightened tensions in the region of West Asia over Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Airstrikes hit the capital, Sana'a, as well as cities of Hodeida, Sa'ada, and Damar. They targeted airbase, airports, and military camp. U.S. media said Tomahawk missiles and fighter jets were used in the attacks. U.S. President Joe Biden says bombing was a direct response to what he called unprecedented attacks by Yemen armed forces on Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea. Biden said Yemeni attacks have threatened the freedom of navigation and endangered American personnel and U.S. partners. He also said strikes on Yemen were conducted with support from Bahrain, Canada, the Netherlands, and Australia.
Australia's support of these actions came in the form of personnel in the operational headquarters. These are very important actions. Australia will continue to support any actions which assert the global rules-based order, which assert the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, and which assert freedom of navigation on the high seas, be that in the Red Sea, be that in the Indo-Pacific, be that in other parts of the world.
Yemen has confirmed US-led attacks. The government in Sana'a says US and Britain will pay a heavy price, calling attacks a stupid act. Yahya Sari, a spokesman for Yemen Armed Forces, just moments ago said over 70 missiles hit multiple cities, leading deaths and injuries, and that the UK and US bear responsibility and a decisive response is awaiting them for these attacks they carried out on Yemen today. And anti-Israel operations, they also said, will continue. Now it says the aggression is unjustified because there's no threat to international shipping in the Red or Arabian Seas. Yemen's reaffirmed its support for Palestinians in Gaza despite this U.S.-led aggression. The country says it has powerful military capabilities and will continue targeting Israel-linked ships until the genocide in Gaza ends. Yemeni protesters pour into the streets of the northern city of Sa'ada, condemning latest U.S.-led aggression on their country. The rally was dubbed a Promised Conquest, with protesters pledging support for the Yemeni army. They also denounced the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Yemenis chanted slogans against the U.S. and Israel over their atrocities in besieged Palestinian territories. Mass rallies are also planned for later Friday in response to a call by Ansarullah leader Abdel Malik al-Houthi. Yemenis have held protests every Friday since the Gaza war broke out more than 3 months ago. The reactions are still pouring in following the U.S.-led aggression on Yemen, with Iran and resistance movements in the region strongly condemning the attacks. Islamic Jihad says aggression is part of Western support for Israel and shows Washington manages the Gaza war. Hamas has called U.S. and U.K. attacks uncalculated terrorist act conducted under the influence of the Israeli regime. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement also said aggression is yet more proof of U.S. complicity in what it called catastrophes in Gaza and the region. Iran's denounced the violation of Yemen's sovereignty and territorial integrity, said attacks violate international law and will foment insecurity in the region. Russia accused U.S. and U.K. of destructive escalation in Yemen and called for U.N. Security Council meeting on Friday. Saudi Arabia and China expressed concern, with Riyadh urging restraint. And now joining us out of Beirut, Lebanon, is Jamal Joaquin, professor of international relations, joining us at a Lebanese university. Hello, professor. Pleasure to have you on. Your initial thoughts. First, by the activities, the anti-Israel operations that Yemen has carried out for quite some time now in the high seas against the port city, the port of Eilat, and now the UK and US response that's left deaths and injuries there in Yemen today.
Well, we need to admit the fact that the Yemeni action in support of Gaza and in support of the Palestinian people have injured heavy casualties and losses on the Israeli economy and paralyzed much of this economy that passes through the Bab el-Mandab path. So that was the reason why, in support of Israel, the United States and the UK directed some air raids on Houthi positions, hoping that this would send a message of solidarity to Israel from on their behalf on one hand, and to in their hope to deter the Houthis on the other hand. However, I believe that the Houthis will not be deterred. They will continue their actions. They have already declared that they will continue blocking all Israeli trade passing through the Bab el-Mandab path, and they have been successful in targeting some warships, British and U.S. warships. And I believe that the United States declared that this action has stopped on their behalf. But what if the Houthis continue blocking the Israeli trade? Will they direct other blows? And what if the Houthis decide to stir up and escalate their blockade to include all American or Western ships, for example? What would be the impact on in reaction to this American and British aggression? What would be the impact in this case on international trade, regardless of the efficiency of the Houthi, for example, capabilities in blocking this trade? But the United States and the UK has transformed the region into a war zone, and this would affect the insurance cost for all ships passing through a war zone, as usual. And this will also deter many international companies from passing through this region. So the US and UK action will have very negative implications on world economy and on the tension in the Middle East.
Right, and it seems the Yemenis feel that every country, in fact, has an obligation to do whatever it can in its own capacity to stop the genocide taking place in Gaza. And if you read up on UN resolutions in the past, you notice that there are calls that and responsibilities that the international community has, even at the Security Council, which we saw the U.S. stop, to try to bring an end when it sees that there's genocide taking place. I mean, it seems like probably the Yemenis feel more countries to try to follow suit. We've seen Hezbollah in Lebanon basically try to engage the Israelis there in the battlefield. But very few, aside from the Yemenis, have taken it this serious to try to stop what is the atrocities taking place and happening to the Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, of course, this also goes by the international law, because Israel is a war criminal and it's committing genocidal war against the Palestinians, and due to the U.S. and Western support, the international law has been paralyzed with regards to Israel, whereas in other cases we would have seen direct intervention by the West in order to impose, let's say, sanctions on the state that is accused of genocidal actions. So I believe that the Yemeni action fully goes by the international law and is part of the, elements or principles of sovereignty that the Yemenis are trying to implement on their territorial water. So this is how we should see things. And let's wait and see what would be the reaction of the Yemenis now in the next few days. And this will tell us much about the situation, how it will go.
And many are concerned that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, to cover up for the atrocities taking place in Yemen because of all the face that Israel has lost and what it's done to Gaza for the last 100 days, has been trying to get its Western allies into a regional conflict and trying to basically spread the tensions throughout the region. And we know that it was actually Netanyahu that called Joe Biden and said, look, we have our hands full in Gaza, obviously killing women and children, and can you please help us with some help on the Red Sea, stopping these shipping, our ships from getting intercepted by the Yemenis. So, but this is, you know, you see Benjamin Netanyahu behind a couple dimensions of this story. First, he asked for help, and we know that this could easily turn into an escalation of this conflict, what's taking place between the UK and the US and Yemen right now.
Yes, I fully agree, because the Benjamin Netanyahu is in a very dire situation. He has not achieved any of its declared objectives in Gaza. He's facing mounting opposition inside Israel. He's awaiting trial for allegations of corruption, and he's been unable to achieve anything tangible against the Lebanese resistance in southern Lebanon. That's why he reverted to asking for help and aid from Biden, who, of course, intervened on his behalf as usual, as we're all used to this by the United States, who have always given full support and unconditional support to Israel, noting that the current administration of Joe Biden is full of responsibles who have dual nationality, American and Israeli nationality. Most of them are Zionists, and this is predictable, or this has been predictable actually. But this wouldn't change the course of the conflict, because the world has changed. The United States is no longer the sole superpower in the world to impose its will as it wishes. And of course, the axis of resistance has grown stronger in the past few decades, and it has reached a level of coordination among its various members to the extent of being able to direct a unified strategy to confront the Israeli aggression in the region.
And Professor Joachim, what crosses your mind, and how does it make you feel when you see that Washington and London care more for the protection of Israeli containers than they do for the children of Gaza?
Well, this is part of their culture, actually. We should admit the fact that the Western civilization, or let's say the West in general, has shaped its modern culture with racism. So for them, non-Westerners are subhumans. And this has been the case since the second half of the 19th century onward. And this could explain, for example, their genocidal acts against Africans, against Indians, and against non-European people throughout the world. We should have expected this with regards to Palestine and with regards to the children of Gaza, who are not as valuable for them as the Israeli soldiers who commit war crimes.
Okay, thank you. Jamal Joachim, Professor of International Relations, thank you for your time on the program here for this extended conversation. Joining us there from Beirut. Stay safe, sir. Meanwhile, more Palestinian civilians are falling victim to intense Israeli attacks on Gaza, where nearly 23,500 people have died since the 7th of October. Health officials out of Gaza say over a dozen civilians were killed in airstrikes on Rafah and Khan Yunis, both in southern Gaza, and to central Gaza in Deir al-Balah. Palestinian journalist was killed in an airstrike near Al-Aqsa Hospital. The government media office in Gaza says the Israeli regime is using genocide and starvation as a policy to force Palestinians out of the territory, and that's in reference to a comment by a far-right Israeli minister who's encouraging Palestinians to immigrate from Gaza. The media office called on the international community to condemn heinous Israeli atrocities and displacement.
Since October the 7th, the Israeli regime has been conducting a genocide against the people of Palestine. Numerous documents have emerged that have documented Israel's criminal and murderous acts against the people of Palestine. A newly emerged viral video on social media shows Israeli snipers targeting civilians. Israeli snipers targeted a group of mostly women and children who were passing through a Gaza street carrying white flags as a token of peace. They gunned down one Palestinian woman carrying a child. A separate video has also emerged showing Israeli forces deliberately targeting Palestinian youths in a village in the occupied West Bank. The footage shows a young man standing in a central square when he was suddenly shot. The man then drops to the ground. Two others rushing to his aid were also hit, leaving a 17-year-old dead. Israel is already facing a genocide case at the International Court of Justice after South Africa filed a lawsuit against the regime.
Today we say thank you. Thank you to South Africa. Thank you for filing case against occupation at the ICJ. We believe that many countries felt our pain, but South Africa decided to put it materially in paper.
Pretoria's initiative has been welcomed by several countries. It's more than 3 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, which has not only caused the loss of thousands of innocent lives, but has also inflicted severe mental and physical harm upon Palestinians.
And that's it for your latest. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime's multi-billion dollar heavy equipment has been rendered useless. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, "The Zionist regime's military's dismal performance in Gaza and on the Lebanese border has exposed its inadequacies." once the current regional war goes from low to high intensity, the Zionist regime will experience far greater difficulties than its intelligence analysts foresee. Prior to reviewing the Zionist regime's dire military situation, an important fact must be borne in mind. Currently, the Zionist regime's primary military adversary is the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. The resistance emerged and advanced its capabilities under years of severe siege and incessant military, intelligence, economic, and political attacks. Yet, despite massive external backing, there is growing consensus even among pro-Israeli circles that the Zionist military's performance is far below what was hitherto projected. The bulk of Israel's military hardware comes from the United States. Without the unconditional backing of Washington, any regional army would be able to chew the Zionist army. Amateurs talk tactics, while professionals look at logistics. So let us begin with basic logistical realities. The U.S. is very far from Palestine. It is much further than it is from Ukraine. In the proxy war in Ukraine against Russia, despite the industrial, military, and political backing of numerous EU regimes, the United States is still struggling to adequately supply Ukraine, not just in financial terms, but also in logistical terms. How will the U.S. provide multifaceted logistical backing to the Zionist regime in a geopolitically more hostile environment than the one in Europe? This will be quite problematic. Those in doubt, just think about how a country like Yemen, with determination and geopolitical strategy, has managed to turn the logistics of the global trade upside down. Sana'a is doing this with minimal effort and no direct Iranian participation. Once the regional dimension of the current war in Palestine goes into the higher gear, Iran's role will increase, so will Yemen's. Put two and two together, and it becomes quite clear what grand problems await the fabricated regime of Israel from a logistic and geopolitical angle. Let us now return to the micro-military matters unfolding in Palestine. Numerous videos emerging from Gaza show the Palestinian resistance is targeting the heavily armed invading Zionist military at very close range. The Zionist regime's multi-billion dollar heavy equipment has been rendered useless. In urban environment, the fight is between two infantries. This is where training along with motivation compensate for lack of sophisticated equipment. At the infantry level, the only clear advantage the Zionist militants have over the Palestinian resistance is probably their access to night vision equipment. In all other aspects, the field is quite leveled. While these may appear as tactical matters, viewed within the broader regional context, they assume much greater significance. Demonstrations against Zionism is one of multiple theaters. When the tactical difficulties the Zionist regime faces in Gaza are combined with the confrontational methodology it faces from Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and Iran, each contributing in their own calculated manner, Tel Aviv's prospects look quite grim. If one looks at each of these countries listed within the context of the resistance axis, it becomes clear that the geopolitical leverage combined with logistical and intelligence aspects greatly overstretch Zionist forces. Missiles raining down on Israel from Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon will overwhelm its air defenses. Protracted ground resistance in Palestine, Gaza, and the West Bank is exhausting its infantry and intelligence capabilities. All these factors drain the Zionist regime's economy, and this creates a deadly cocktail for the Zionists when viewed through the time lens. The fabricated regime of Israel has never fought a prolonged war against regionally allied forces that also enjoy state backing. It should also be remembered that the only time the Zionist regime's genocidal military formations fought a conventional style war in recent decades was against Hezbollah in 2006. Experienced regional analysts have concluded that Israel was soundly defeated in 2006. Even in the current conflict, as reported by the Washington Post on January 7th, Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, found that it will be difficult for Israel forces to succeed because its military assets and resources would be spread too thin. Prior to 2006, and even after, the Zionist regime's army was engaged more in police-like activities against poorly equipped and poorly organized civilian-driven resistance groups. This is no longer the case. Today, the Zionist regime is facing much better organized and significantly better equipped and experienced forces, and not just in Palestine. In historical terms, the Israeli regime army can best be described as Soviet-style NKVD units responsible for terrorizing a society rather than a formidable military force. As the fabricated regime of Israel does not control the regional escalation ladder, the next conventional regional war will be fought on terms and conditions not determined and framed by Tel Aviv or its Western backers. Add the global geopolitical dimension to evolving local factors. Russia's strategic interest is to bog down NATO regimes and their allies in a protracted conflict. NATO regimes are doing the same to Russia in Ukraine. Soon, the Zionist occupiers will get a rude awakening about what the new multipolar world order really is all about.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, after more than 3 months of waging genocide on Gaza, the Israeli regime has not reached any of its goals in the Strip. It has not destroyed the resistance, nor has it been able to free its captives. And the resistance is inflicting a bitter battle upon them. So what should the regime do next? Well, it must find a way to get out of this while trying to save face. How about waging a war on Lebanon and Hezbollah? Could that even be a possible option? Well, we're going to look at this on tonight's Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Julia Kassem, journalist and political analyst out of Beirut, and Zakir Ahmed Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst out of Johannesburg. Thank you both for being with us. I started off in Beirut, and Julia, according to the Washington Post article, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the region to decrease tensions and the possibility of Israel waging war on Hezbollah. Do you think that Blinken really wants to dissuade the regime from expanding the war, or your analysis of it?
The
constant flying in from U.S. officials, EU officials like Joseph Borrell, EU's foreign affairs representative, coming in and out to Lebanon. Primarily, they're coming for the purpose of begging Hezbollah to basically concede to Israel's demands of withdrawing from its own territory and its own border, which it is protecting from Zionist aggression. We've seen since October 8th, the Hezbollah has been effective in basically destroying all of the Zionist entities' security infrastructure across the border. Has made the Zionist entity furious and, of course, more insecure than ever, with 250,000 of its over 500,000 settlers in the northern area of occupied Palestine alone forcibly, left the area, evacuated the settlements, and they're not coming back, unlike the temporary evacuations of at most 100,000 or so in the southern border of Lebanon. With this security infrastructure completely destroyed, with a lot of thousands and thousands of soldiers, which it's not admitting to, injured, at least 12,000, which we can estimate up to 4,000 killed. A lot of that has been the success of the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance from the north, which has put the occupation in an extremely insecure and extremely strained position, fighting on another front at the same time, getting destroyed. It is getting destroyed in Gaza. So now that there is this defeat in Gaza that that has had the occupation withdraw from the Gaza Strip, now it wants to focus on trying to recover the inevitable losses from what it calls the Northern Front, the area with Hezbollah.
Okay, stay with me because I'm going to look at it a little bit more in the show. Get a little bit deeper involved in that. Well, Zakir, according to reports, Blinken is concerned that the expansion of the war would bring in Iran and the United States. Your thoughts about this?
I think it's already a global war. The Islamic Republic of Iran has established numerous people in the region. We're talking about Hashd al-Shaabi, Hezbollah, the brothers of Ansar Allah, to aid the Palestinian people. We know that the establishment of the Quds Force, with its primary mission, as described by Sayyidina Hassan Nasrallah, is the army of Quds. It's for the liberation of Palestine. And this is a point that unifies not just the people of the Middle East, but all peace-loving people that believe in justice. There has to be justice. There can be no peace without justice and no justice without return. That being said, when we look at what is happening with the United States, this particular war that has been waged on the people of Gaza has been funded, supported, and planned by the United States. This is very clear from the military support, the large numbers of ships that have been providing military supplies to Israel, and the backing of two aircraft carrier battle groups to support Israel's genocide on the Palestinian people. So to argue that they don't want it to escalate whilst they are fully engaged as one of the global superpowers is a falsehood. What it is doing right now is that Israel is depleted, Israel is lashing out, and as a result, we saw reckless actions on the part of the Zionist entity by assassinating Commander Saleh al-Ghouri in Beirut. By doing so, it naturally expands the field. We see the expansion taking place as we speak right now. Sirens are going off in the Golan. There is possible infiltration of drones from that quarter or missiles. So, and we know that Iraq has fired an advanced cruise missile, and there were explosions in the port of Haifa today. So the war has already expanded, and this argument that they're trying to contain it, I think it's false, because Israel is a wild animal that cannot be contained.
Well, Julia, Secretary General of Hezbollah Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has said that if Israel wages war on Lebanon, the resistance will remove all of its limits to wage war against the Israeli regime. What do you think that means?
So what we saw yesterday, for example, is Hezbollah threw hit 62 rockets on one of the highest points of surveillance bases that is responsible for every one of these genocidal warplanes, their location and basically their reach from Lebanon to Cyprus to Syria to occupied Palestine. As Nasrallah said, similarly, in a speech over a month prior, all options are on the table. If the Zionist entity wants to provoke and wants to expand its genocide and completely have no limits to how it's going to retaliate in the wake of like this huge loss in Gaza. Of course, there is going to be a necessary deterrence against that. There's going to be necessary resistance to that. While Hezbollah's moves are calculated, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be equal force or no retaliation for these string of assassinations or the nonstop aggression that the Zionist entity is going to take. So Nasrallah has made that clear. He's made it clear in a previous speech where he set the civilian for a civilian equation. It doesn't mean it's going to be necessarily the predictable and immediate response, but it is definitely, he is setting the equation for there to be a response, and in showing from the attack on the Mount Hermon intelligence base that Hezbollah is capable of wiping out all of the Zionist entity's intelligence, security, air bases, airfields. So this has got them thinking twice. And I think that right now the Zionist entity is at a standstill as to if it wants to immediately pull America into backing this rabid frenzy that it wants to take out on the resistance forces in the region as a last-ditch effort to remove their power, or if it wants to try to find and scramble for some kind of an exit strategy.
Well, Zakir, the American Defense Intelligence Agency has said that if the regime was to wage war against Lebanon, it would be very difficult for it to win because its forces would be spread too thin due to war in Gaza. I mean, your overall thoughts about the regime trying to go up against Hezbollah?
Hezbollah is much stronger than the brothers of Qassam and Soraya in Gaza. In fact, Hezbollah's capabilities are listed as some of the largest weapons caches held by a non-state actor in the world. And we look at the measured response of Hezbollah with regards to the transgressions committed by the Zionist entity. We look at the accuracy with which Hezbollah has responded. A perfect example is the targeting of the Iron Dome battery. And they fired basically two guided artillery shells. These artillery shells struck the Iron Dome battery that completely took it offline and exposed the north in part to fire from Hezbollah. We look at the response now with regards to the Miron site and the intelligence headquarters, and we look at how they struck that particular site with artillery, with ATGMs, anti-tank guided missiles. By the looks of it, looks like the Hornet missiles, as well as rocket fire. And the precision with which Hezbollah hit is an indicator to Israel that this is not going to be one where they can carpet bomb an area and try and achieve some degree of deterrence. It's not possible with Hezbollah. Hezbollah has precision-guided munitions. We know it's been a concern for Israel for many years. And to go up against Hezbollah in a head-to-head fight would be suicidal for the Zionist entity. However, what we are seeing now, the escalations of aggression against Lebanon is merely to appease the Zionist population. The political movement, particularly individuals such as Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, although they're not part of the war cabinet, they have been creating a huge fuss and ruckus that Hezbollah is getting away from Israeli reprisal. Hence, this is an attempt to try and appease the population. From a military perspective, Israel is losing on the ground. In fact, they almost lost one of the senior commanders, Commander General Moshe Chikotamir. He was almost struck with an ATGM in Gaza and Shashaiya. So the Qassam brothers almost wiped out the leadership of the Israeli military planning force in the south. If this is the capability of Qassam, we can be rest assured that any fight against Hezbollah will spell the end of the Zionist entity. However, that is already on the cards. We see what is happening with regards to Ansarullah. We see the opening of the front with the brothers of Iraq. And I think that Israel has no other option but to self-destruct.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Julia, for 3 months now, we've seen Hezbollah attacking the Israeli regime, targeting soldiers and bases, as well as other strategic areas in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza. How would you assess Hezbollah's role this last 3 months in helping to open another front and basically trying to help alleviate at least some pressure on Gaza? Your overall assessment of its performance?
Yeah, as mentioned earlier, we can see the results for ourselves. Half of the new settlers that are not coming back from occupied Palestine. The border between North occupied Palestine and Lebanon completely desecuritized. Hezbollah demonstrating its ability to wipe out Israel's airfields, air intelligence, and so on and so forth. Now that the Zionist entity has resorted to basically flying drones and cameras on parachutes because its cameras and security have been completely destroyed. Through a course of at least 637, I'm sure it's been more now, into the 700s, attacks by Hezbollah, which have been incredibly successful to the extent that this is primarily for the Zionist entity to want to pull America into backing an aggression against Lebanon if it doesn't get its demand of Hezbollah pushing back past the Litani in its own territory. This has all been incredibly successful, and this is only at barely over 1% of Hezbollah's capacity. So one can really imagine if it goes just above 10%, 15%, how much that would really overwhelm the Zionist entity in its current state. And this is primarily, it shows, it's a testament to not only the strength of Hezbollah, but the weakness of the Zionist entity.
Well, Zakir, what's your overall assessment of the United States regarding Tel Aviv trying to expand the war even more so into Lebanon? Do you think Washington actually is okay with this, or do they want to prevent it? Or how do you see Washington's real role in this?
As I stated earlier, this entire plan to genocide the population of Gaza was planned, supported, and funded by the United States. The fact that they had brought aircraft carriers under the pretext of deterring the Islamic Republic and deterring Hezbollah is an indication that they had globalized the fight from the get-go. However, the United States is very quick to strike and to create the impression of deterrence, but they would not want it to turn into a battlefield. This is why they are struggling so much in the Red Sea with regards to their coalition in securing the assets for Israel. They have not been able to contain Ansarullah, and the possibility of opening a fight up in the north if the wildness of Israel is allowed to rampage through the north, this would automatically draw the United States into a new confrontation. They do not have the capabilities, they do not have the manpower, they do not have the supply. This has all been depleted due to the Ukrainian war, and the status of the Ukrainian war is clear for all to see. The United States, together with the European allies, have lost that particular war. The strategic reserves have been depleted. Israel was asked to give the strategic reserves to Ukraine. That has been depleted and used up. And if there has to be an expansion both in Iraq, in Yemen, as well as with regards to Lebanon, I believe that will bring the end of the empire. We have to look at the United States and Israel through one lens, as one entity. This would bring about the end of the hegemony, and I believe this is a deep concern for the United States. However, because of the error that they have made at the very beginning, they have globalized this fight, and it's not a trajectory that can be changed very quickly or anytime soon. It's already been stated by Sayyidina Hassan Nasrallah in his most recent opportunity to liberate the lands. And that means that we are heading towards a globalized fight, a battlefield on all fronts, and the United States is acutely aware of that. That is why they are trying so hard to have some sort of a peace deal. They're talking about the day after Hamas, after the governance of Hamas in Gaza. And they're trying desperately to bring an end to this conflict. However, Israel, due to its arrogance, will not allow that. It needs to establish deterrence, and it's not possible.
Julia, your perspective, where do you see this going if this war explodes even more than it has and involves more and more parties? I'd like to hear your assessment of what do you think is possibly to happen.
Yeah, so what's the current stuff is the direct that the rights entity is trying to escalate Lebanon by bringing the United States also to leader. I actually expect a couple days ago Yemen to be attacked, but so far, surprisingly, and this kind of shows the United States in the face of a failed coalition to assemble the sea, that it even lost its deterrence power against the Houthis. The United States' bases, just like the Zionist entity, is being blinded in the South Lebanon, North Palestine border. You also see a reduced capability of the U.S. to really reinforce the Zionist entity's occupation in the region and its own occupation in Iraq and Syria, because those bases have been hit at least 110 plus times. Finally, it looks like the last step on this this whole ladder of confrontation, as the U.S. right now is relegated to a supporting and a reinforcing role for the Zionist entity, is in the event that things would escalate to where it itself is brought in to directly confront Iran. This is something that Israel is desperately trying to get to. It wants to bring in the U.S. To this direct confrontation because ultimately Iran is its target. It sees it as like the head of all of the forces of resistance that are currently running and slipping away of its existence. And so that's kind of how things are expected to play out and escalate if we see it going forth as it is.
Okay, we're keeping our eyes, of course, very closely on that. Appreciate both of you being with us on the Spotlight. Julia Qasem, journalist and political analyst out of Beirut. Zaki Ahmed Mayed, attorney, activist, and political analyst out of Johannesburg. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi'a al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
An introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was one of the pure fountainheads of knowledge and wisdom. He was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the son of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. And Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam himself was the 10th divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. The ulama and the religious scholars and the fuqaha, the Islamic jurisprudence of the Shia, asked Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam about the different branches of knowledge while he was yet a very young child. And despite his young age, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered all of these great religious scholars and these great religious jurisprudents with the answers of an expert. It was these very answers of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam which made the Shia scholars and Shia jurisprudents and the other leaders of the Shia to believe in the imama of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawin.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat ad-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about the dialogues of the 10th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has this beautiful life in his imamat, of course, which covers the various different aspects of Islam, as well as the various different scientific aspects as well. So when it comes to the scientific sciences related to Islam, we find that His Eminence was at the forefront and the leader of guidance, and he was the master, the expertise. I mean, he was the immaculate Imam when it came to the Holy Quran and the tafsir of the Quran and the understanding of the Quran, and as well as the Sirah and the Sunnah of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, as well as the other divinely appointed Imams. And so Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was really this pivotal individual in the Muslim world who was